Welcome to the Rearview Mirror Podcast, looking back on all that we don't know and a few things that we do.
Count us in, big boy.
Mic check. Hey, welcome to season two.
It kind of is because we took a 1 week break.
Yeah, welcome. Yeah. What'd you do over the break? Break? It's been a while.
Man, it was a great break. Yeah. You know, we went to Europe for a day. No, I did nothing over the break.
Okay.
Kind of an unexpected break, but it worked out kind of cool.
Yeah, so we'll see what season two has in store.
Yeah.
Season one was fun.
Yeah.
You know,
16 I think episodes. When you,
was it? Is
yeah.
that what we did?
Yeah.
That lapse makes people want more, you know, leaves them wanting more a little bit.
I haven't looked online yet, David. I bet the internet's blowing up about where we've been.
Why have we not dropped one?
Yeah.
Surprised I didn't see it scrolling through the headlines this morning, you know?
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
All right. Season two. Underway.
We can call it that. I'm great with that name.
Yeah, episode one, season two.
So in season two, what will we change? What can listeners expect to be different in season two?
More coherency, maybe.
I don't know how that's going to happen.
Just better content.
Yeah.
I don't know, really.
We should bring in some guests.
Oh, really?
No, I have no idea.
Who would we bring in?
Who would want to? That would be the challenge.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we only have two microphones.
Oh, that's a good point.
So
I have some logistics. Well, we could solve the logistics, but who would we want to bring in?
Who would want to come in? That may be a shorter list.
Okay. So we probably will not do guests. Still just be the two of us.
Yeah, that's
all right.
We did get some questions.
I know. It was kind of fun. I was surprised. It was cool. There's some great questions. Should we just share some of them and see if one of them hits for today?
Pick one.
Okay. I typed them all up so I'd have them in front of me. Okay,
sure,
so
you did.
I like structure. I don't want to look in six different places. This was a fun one. The correct way to load a dishwasher and how that can lead to a more fulfilling marriage. You have a story about that in your own family, right?
I thought I knew who that came from.
Oh, did you really?
From a listener in Alabama. And it turns out there is someone else who shares a very strong opinion on how to load and unload a dishwasher.
Yeah, this is a guy right here in our hometown.
Yeah. My father-in-law, my mother-in-law passed away a few years back. My father-in-law got remarried to a great lady down in Florence, Alabama. Very capable. She's taught school, taught in college, raised a family. You know, her husband passed away several years ago, too. So, he married this very capable
That's
woman.
That's awesome.
And lo and behold, they're at our house not too long after they got married, and she shares that she didn't know how to properly load and unload a dishwasher until she married my father-in-law.
Well, there's our next guest.
Yeah.
Who can teach us how to unload the dishwasher.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he's a very competent guy. He's really smart, and he probably does, but he, she just didn't know what she didn't know, you know, until that. And so turns out there's someone else here that also feels like they know how to, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I just didn't know there was a right way to unload a dishwasher.
Yeah. Well, you know, the guy who asked that here, his name is Bob, and, you know, Bob's a good friend. We both know him well, you know, and Bob writes a column, too, that people can subscribe to. And Bob, if you're listening in, here's our deal. We need to get you to write a column that explains to your readers how to properly load a dishwasher and how that's helped you and Susan's marriage.
Right.
And when that happens, then we may have to figure out a way to get a third microphone and have Bob come in here and share with our listeners that.
Now that I think about it, when I'll load the dishwasher, which may not be all that often, I do hear Jen in there roaming around and moving stuff around sometimes. So there's probably some things I can learn about.
Laura always corrects mine. Yeah. I would always often corrects mine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, although I've got this side of me that I correct the way she does the silverware too. So golly, I hate to admit that question, actually, I might have thoughts on it.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. This podcast is exposing things in me I don't like talking about.
The silverware.
I'm more obsessive compulsive than I want to
know. Oh, dude, I don't think, I'm not sure that's a blind spot. I think we kind of knew that, didn't we?
I think it is a blind spot. Speaking of, that was one of the other questions that came in is about blind spots. What are the parts of ourselves we can't see clearly, but everyone else often can? And this guy had several kind of sub-questions under blind spots. What's a blind spot you've discovered about yourself? How is it revealed to you? How do you even begin to identify blind spots, especially when by definition you can't see them?
That's what I was thinking. If they're blind, that's what makes it.
It's a great question, though.
Well, there's a lot of questions in there. Say them again. Say the first one again.
Yeah. What's a blind spot you've discovered about yourself? So obviously somehow you've it's no longer a blind spot. How was it revealed to you? How has it changed over time? Who in your life has permission to tell you the truth, even when it stings? So, you know, who can expose your blind spots? What's been the cost of not dealing with your blind spots? Why do you think we protect certain patterns or stories, even when they're hurting us? How can leaders create cultures where feedback is welcomed and not feared? This guy's done a lot of thinking about blind spots.
Yeah. That's a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Good. Those are good questions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. There's another listener who sent in several questions. So they're loving the ages of their kids, enjoying traveling a lot as a family. They have kids, if I remember right, that are probably 11 or 12 and under, if I'm thinking. What are the best vacations you took as y'all were raising your families and why? Any trips you'd recommend to a family with young kids like ours? And then they had a couple other questions. From your perspective, how does work look different for our generation? They're younger than us. From a career lens, what advice would you offer us? This was a great question. As a working parent, they both work, husband and wife. I often feel guilty about taking time to go do my own hobbies or go on girls' trips. It just seems like more time away from the kids. Is this something I will outgrow? Does it get easier when the kids get older? I appreciate that wrestling match of, you know, how do I take time for me in the midst of already having a busy schedule and wanting to prioritize the kids? And then this was one that, you know, boy, I've been thinking about and I've kind of already walked through. As our parents get older, what advice do you have about aging parents? What's the best way to love them well? Yeah. And then another question they had, we currently attend a church based on the fact that it's the best option for our kids and not necessarily the first choice we would make. Is that wrong? Will that change? I guess we have to wait to become empty nesters to find the church that would be our first choice. So just, you know, it's kind of like, what do we do with that? You know? Any of those hit you for today? There was a whole nother set of questions about father wound, how dad shaped the dad I'm becoming. And this guy, again, some really thoughtful questions, 4 or 5 sub-questions about this, about, you know, do you see your father's voice or silence show up in how you talk to your kids? What part of your dad's parents are you intentionally repeating? What part are you working to avoid? What emotions surface when you think about your dad's presence or absence with you growing up? And this guy had some really, this guy feels like a therapist, man.
All right.
He had some questions that were really saying, man, can we talk about the father wound and how dad shapes, you know, I always talk about how our parents form us and how they deform us.
Right.
You know, it's both and, right? So he's asking great questions on that. But so there's probably like 5, 6, 7 different categories that came in on questions. And again, thanks y'all who sent them in. Anytime you have any, please feel free to do so. But any of those grab you that we should talk about today or anything else on your mind?
I was just thinking that's season 2, 3, and 4 worth probably of questions.
There's so many good questions there.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
What's another word for a blind spot in your world? Client comes in. What would you?
I would probably talk a lot about lack of awareness. Hmm. You know, just a place where you know you've developed a habitual pattern that you know has just felt normal, but you don't see the potential negative impact of that pattern. Hmm. So I think probably a lack of awareness, a blind spot. A bad habit. I mean, I think there's a lot of things that we could refer to it as.
I wonder what brought that question up.
That'd be a great question to ask him.
Oh, right.
Or her. The guy.
Because if you can't see a blind spot, somebody's brought it up to you.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, by definition. Right. That's what he said. He said, you know, was when he said, how do you even begin to identify blind spots? Especially when, by definition, you can't see them.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yes, I just wondered, sounds like somebody's brought up a blind spot.
Well, it goes back to what you said last season. That's fun, on our last episode 2 weeks ago. but when you talked about we were talking about the loneliness stuff, and you said, you know, it's like Genesis 2 says, it's not good for man to be alone. We never hear the complete why it's not good.
Right.
We always try to figure it out ourselves. But this is probably one of the biggest reasons it's not good to live alone. You know, we need, whether it's a really good friend, whether it's a spouse, whether it's our adult children, you know, we need people who know us well who can, I always call it, hold the mirror up to us for us to have to look into it. And sometimes have to say, hey, I don't think you're looking in the right part of the mirror. You know, right. Jeff, look right here. I think this is a spot that you don't look in, therefore a blind spot.
Right.
So I do think, you know, I don't know how we ever identify blind spots if we don't have some people that we trust speak into us. I guess the other way is we make enough stupid choices that at some point we have a moment of going, gosh, I keep doing the same thing the same way, right? Yeah. When you think about blind spots in your journey, like how have they been exposed to you along life's way? Can you think of moments like that?
I haven't thought of any moments, but I think you when I think about blind spots, one of the things I think is helpful as you get older is I got a friend that I do some work with, and he always says all facts are friendly.
Huh, that's a great phrase. All facts are friendly.
And I love that because you're going to get feedback from people to the other question. You're going to get feedback from people that don't have permission to say that.
Yeah.
And so part of it is, you know, ignore maybe how that came about or if that caused friction or was not delivered in a great way and just look at the message.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are people saying about you? Mm-hmm. And is it true?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think just being able to sift through, hey, what's true?
Yeah.
What could be true? What's worth exploring?
Yeah.
Because if somebody's brought up a blind spot to you, then you've probably hurt them.
Yeah. Hurt.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know why you'd bring it up other than, I don't think most people do things out of pure motives.
Right.
For the most part.
Right.
Could be wrong.
Yeah. No, I remember being asked that question years ago by a mentor who said, Jeff, what have you ever done out of a completely pure motive? And I went, well, let me think for a second. And he goes, well, you're already answering the question wrong.
I'll save you the time.
But I remember that from 40 years ago, but he was basically saying, none of us are ever completely pure. He goes, you've done some great things, I'm sure. You've done some good things, and you're doing more good things. But pure motive? None of us are. We're not that place in life. We won't be ever. You know, there's always going to be something in the subterranean part of who we are. We may not be aware of it.
Right.
But I think that's true. All facts are friendly. That was the quote, right?
Yeah.
That's a great quote.
Yeah.
When you said.
Well, it takes the emotion out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because we're on, he said it a couple times when we're all on a conference call trying to make a decision on something in our world. And, you know, there, as with any business, there are folks we like dealing with, folks we don't like dealing
right.
with. And so this is a good phrase. Hey, let's just take the emotion out of it.
Yeah.
And let's just, what's on the surface?
What are they saying?
And then let's add the color we know about that group.
Yeah.
And sift through it and make a decision.
Yeah.
So it's good.
Yeah. When you said this a minute ago, usually when someone points out your blind spot, it's probably because you've hurt them. I think that's generally true. But as you were talking, I had this thought. I thought, you know, the idea of a blind spot, I think, connotes or kind of has this sense of going, oh, if I have a blind spot, it's a negative thing going on in me. But I think there's times people have a blind spot to something that they do really well. Mm. Also,
that's a good point.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I can't think of an example in my life, but you know, I think there's times I've talked with people who I'll see something, I'll say, man, you seem to do that really well with your kids when they're growing up. Maybe that's just hit my mind. And they don't see it as something. It's just like, well, that's just kind of what I do.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I do think there's a part of a blind spot that can be a way we get to encourage people that we know well when we can say, good. Can I tell you something you do that's really, really strong? So that's reframing the word the phrase blind spot for me today in real time right now.
That's a great observation. And, you know, I'm just thinking about it. You just in conversations with people during the week at work or, you know, friends or golf friends or whatever. You don't hear many people say, man, you're really good at that.
Boy.
You know, especially mm-hmm. guys.
Oh, we're terrible.
Yeah.
Is it the competitive nature? What is that about in us, what you think?
I don't know. I think some of it is just an observation. It's off the top of my head. I think some of it goes back to loneliness, and we're probably dying to talk about ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's not many places to do that. Yeah. So when you deflect like that, then the conversation's going to shift to that person. But, it is, but you can see it when you say something or when I have somebody say to me, man, that was really good.
Yeah.
And it's life giving.
Yeah. When you said just a second ago, you said, off the top of my head, I thought that's what we should have named this podcast.
off the top of my head. Yeah.
That's what we do every time.
Man. Is there anything going on besides any part but the top of my head?
Oh, I'd like to think sometimes.
I'm sure my wife would say, use some of the other parts of your brain that aren't on the top.
One of the questions he asked about blind spots was, who in your life has permission to tell you the truth, even when it stings? Not necessarily by name, but like, do you feel like you have some of those people? And is that a lot? Is it a few? Is it family? Is it beyond? Like, just curious, like when you think of that question.
I don't know. The pause is, I don't know that I've explicitly given somebody permission to say my blind spots. The first thing that comes to mind is, we've talked about this before, when you have younger kids not, you know, being so dictatorial with them.
Right.
If you'll relax as a parent a bit, you'll get incredible feedback from your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
And B, they don't have as many filters as we have.
Right.
And C, if they know that you love them, they're not trying to win your approval necessarily all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They'll just
mm-hmm.
tell you things.
Yeah.
And you probably get some great feedback from them.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's harder for your spouse. They've got more to lose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's risky for them to
say
things to you and about you and find the right time. And then they've got their own, you know, personalities trying to keep the peace or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm a hard person to do that with because I have a strong personality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think I'm fairly open to feedback, but there's always this, you know, this is good and bad, like everything. You know,
yeah.
if you're more introverted, Enneagram, whatever, 4, 9,
mm-hmm.
5, there's always this backdrop of I can live alone.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can be fine by myself. Now, that's not true.
Right.
And I know that's not true.
Right.
But that's the tape that plays.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think when people are around us, people wired like that, they can kind of tread on eggshells a little bit more because they know, he might go away for a year.
Mm. So you think,
you know what I mean?
In some ways that disposition causes others to be slower, maybe.
I think so.
To offer,
I think it could,
feedback about blind spots for you.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, no, that's a great insight. Yeah. Flip the question around the other way. I don't know if he asked this or not. Are you good at offering feedback to, you know, people that you're in relationship with when you see a blind spot in them? Or do you withhold that, even if you see it, because you're pretty darn intuitive and insightful. When you see it, is your tendency to say, I need to move toward my buddy and talk to him about this? Or is it more just going, yep, I see it. Hopefully they'll see it one day.
Probably the latter.
Really?
Yeah. I mean.
The hell do you always tell me about my blind spots?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe you should revoke the permission for that.
No, I'm kidding. I love it. I've said that to you before.
I'll joke around with friends about stuff. I mean, maybe I should answer that a different way. We, you know, people I'm close with, I don't mind talking about stuff or joking with, but if it's something serious,
right?
You know, like, I don't care that you're OCD.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean.
Right.
I mean, we laugh about it, but I don't. It doesn't make any difference to me at all, one way or the other. And so, I think if I see something, I've had conversations with my kids where I've said, as they've gotten to be older and adults, just hey, just be aware. This is your tendency with your kind of personality. Just be aware.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's a gracious way.
And Jen and I have talked about stuff where I say, just, you know, when the moment's right, hey, do you see this in me? Or I would just encourage you to, you know, for her, remember what's true as an Enneagram 6, you know, remember what's true. But other people, I don't have a high sense of justice, so I don't feel like I need to, do a lot of correction.
Yeah.
Maybe that's... Yeah. Passive. I'm sure it probably is in some ways, but I think at this age, like, man, people are what they are.
Yeah.
I'm just going to try to encourage and be a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got a huge blind spot. I may say something, or if the moment is right, one-on-one conversation, I might say something like, man, you've mentioned that a lot. What's going on there?
Yeah. 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 Well, 'cause I think there is a fine line between, offering unsolicited feedback on something, you know, the best of friends, you know. And I think in certain relationships, marriage, children, closest friends, I think there are moments when we have to look and go, gosh, this feels like it's a pattern and I love this person too much not to say, hey, can I tell you something I'm observing? I may be totally wrong. You know, I think in the spirit of humility, I may be totally wrong, but gosh, it seems like frequently you blank, you know, whatever it is. But yeah, I think a lot of us probably err on the side of more passivity of going, well, maybe I'm seeing it wrong, or well, I don't want to hurt their feelings or whatever. But I think with the people who are closest to me, I love when someone will look at me and say, can I offer you some feedback? Can I tell you something I'm observing? Now, I don't necessarily love hearing it in real time, mm-hmm. but I at a core value level, I want to grow. I want to be better. I want to improve in life. So to do that, the blind spot's got to be held up to me at some point. I got a couple of my kids who have no trouble telling me about my blind spots.
Yeah, I was gonna say you've got some really good ones there. Yeah, I've got one too that'll tell me pretty quickly.
Yes, she will.
Yes, she certainly will. I'm not naming any names, but I only have two kids and I have a boy and a girl. So,
the other one's wired so much like you in some ways.
Oh man, that phrase you just used. What did you just say? I want to get better, or I want
to just improve. I do want to see my blind spots.
That's a very Enneagram one thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I told you I'm all the numbers except for five.
Man, I know, right? That's funny.
Yeah. Multiple personality.
Yeah. This might be embarrassing to say, and this might produce a whole different list of questions, but I don't feel that need to improve.
Yeah.
That bothers me sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfection's already been achieved.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, what's there to improve on, really?
That's right.
I mean, you know,
I've got it all day long. Jen, if you could call in today and do a little live interview with you, we'd appreciate it.
Man, this may be one-way shelf, you know, put on the shelf. Season 2's first episode goes south.
Yeah. No, but for you, what's that about? Because I'll tell you a story about one of my kids that confronted me this week about something similar. What do you think that's about of I don't have this big need to improve?
I don't know. I think, well, one thing is I have several Enneagram 1 friends, and I hear that common language in them. I mean, it's the information, it's the data. Yeah. It's the bringing the stuff to meetings. It's the, you know, need a lot of information and give a lot of information.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is good. And I mean, again, I have a lot of friends like that. So that's perfectly fine. I don't need as much information, but I don't, one of the tapes they say that plays in their head is this constant need to improve.
Yeah.
And I guess when I say that, I don't want to be stagnant, especially I think I'm hypersensitive to it in regards to getting older. Mm-hmm. I don't want to just,
yeah.
I don't really want to grow old gracefully. You know what I mean? I mean, I kind of want to go down swinging a little bit,
yeah.
You know?
And, yeah.
But I don't feel the improve word doesn't come to my mind a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I'd like to be a better father, better husband, better friend. I think those things happen. I think God's always working to do that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
If you're open to it. Mm-hmm. I don't know that there's, I don't know. Maybe that's not making sense.
No, it is. I think my, you know, one of my words I love is intentionality, and your word is more organic, or I don't know what the right word is, but I think even that plays out here. Like for you, I don't think you're averse to improvement in your life. You know,
I don't think I am either.
I think it's just that the concept of somebody, even when I say it out loud, it feels like, oh gosh, it's something I've got to do. Which I think for you, you go, I don't want my four items to do to go improve.
Right.
But I want to be open handed to change, to grow, to get better, whatever the right language is.
That's a better way to say it, I think. Yeah. You know, we had, and I am, you know, good, better, and different. I am wired much more organically, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We had my son and daughter-in-law over for dinner the other night. It was Will's birthday, and had a great time, and you know, we're just kicking around normal topics,
right,
sitting at the table, and ask him about a couple of things about, you know, best memories from your first 26, worst things you're looking forward to, all those questions. We kicked that around for a long time, and it was spontaneous, didn't plan it, but it gave us all an opportunity to talk about the things we loved about him and share some funny stories. And because I thought earlier in the day, I said, man, do I need to do something? Plan something, you know.
Right.
But it's just, that's, for whatever reason, that's just the way our family works better, probably, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm probably more geared to that.
You know, back to that word improve and blind spots that kind of we're on. earlier this week, one of my sons was talking with me, and we didn't use the phrase blind spot, but I think it kind of fits in this topic. He was just saying, Dad, you know, let me back up. My flow of life right now is I'm in the office 3.5 days a week. I love what I do. I've said this for the last decade. I've never had a Monday that I dread coming in. I'm grateful for that. Now, I've had plenty of those before doing this particular job. But in the last decade, I love what I do. Wow. And so he was talking to me, said, Dad, you know, you need to start doing some events. Dad, you need to do these. So you need to find another place, and you and Mom need to go build a marriage event and take people to it and sell a room out. Or Dad, why don't you do something more with men? Why don't you do these adventure trips and all this stuff? And
which kid was telling you this?
Well, if you can't figure that out, you don't know my family.
I thought I knew, but
you do. So anyway, although I could hear any one of them doing this with me, and yes. You know, but this particular conversation was with Jacob. But he just, he was really pushing, like, Dad, you know, I don't remember what his exact words were, but it's like, Dad, don't be passive. Dad, don't become complacent. You need to do more. And it's interesting, as I heard that, I thought, because I really want to be open to feedback. I said, man, I appreciate that. I really want to ponder that, because the last thing I want my life to be in this, you know, this final chapter, however many years, I hope a lot that I have, is I don't want to just fizzle out. Like you said, go down swinging. You know, I want to do some things that make sense and maximize what I've been given. Well, but as he was saying it, I said, I don't know. I want to exert the energy toward doing that. Mm. And he said, so you don't have the energy for it. I said, no, I don't know if it's that I don't have the energy. I don't know that I want to spend energy doing big events right now. And he said, but Dad, why wouldn't you? You know, you could influence more people. You could make more money. You could do this. And then I said this, I said, yep, I hear that. I wonder if for me, I'm actually just content and I really like the flow of my life right now. Hmm. And it was good, because he was like, maybe. He goes, or is it that you're passive? And it was just this great conversation, you know, and I found myself this week 3 or 4 times just thinking about that, going, how do you know the difference between, man, I'm really content, life works well, I'm dialing it in, you know. You know that phrase.
How old is Jake?
Almost 30.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I think it's a perfect season of life question for him. Like, build more, do more, build more. Absolutely, sure. Man. I think your 20s, 30s, 40s. You need to be building the kingdom, if you please. You know, your own personal kingdom, even. And I just feel like in this season of my life, the need for that isn't there. But I don't want to be lazy with what I've been given. I want to use it well. I think the biggest part of my brain's going, and I think I'm doing that fine, and I'm really content with how I flow. Mm. But again, in the spirit of blind spots we're talking about today, I want to be willing to take that question from him and just continue to ponder it. So I'm going to go, okay, well, is there something else that would be congruent with who I am that I would want to do that I need to be doing? Is there any place where I'm just dialing it in? But I also, as I get older, I want to be at peace with going, I don't have to build anything new. Mm. I really like.
I wonder if some of that too is the second half of life stuff. You do lose the, you lose some of the edge to constantly be building and producing
Well, I think a lot of the things that I did build along life's journey, at that, you know, no pure motive, as we said a little bit ago, I think a lot of I was building to prove that I'm worth it, to prove that I'm valuable, to prove that I'm enough, to impress you. And I think as I get older, not that that's not still in me, but I think as I get older, there's a big part of me too that just goes, I don't need to do that. I'm cool. I'm okay. I don't have anything to prove on that. Now, there are other places I'm sure I still do. But generally speaking, I go, no, that I've built some of those things and I know what the payoff is. And I don't know that's what I want right now.
Mm. I'm a little envious of that.
Hmm. You're still so much younger than me.
I know, right? God, it's a huge age gap. Much closer to Jake's age.
In your mind.
Yeah, in my mind. I don't feel a lot of contentedness.
Yeah.
And I still
mentioned that several weeks ago.
I still have the urge to, you know, we've talked about this. I've got a great business. You know, I say great. A business I enjoy. I've been doing a long time. I'd love to find another group to kind of give back to and, you know, do some things that are not real estate related, you know? And so that may be a wild hair, but, I've almost got, it's almost like I've gotten a second wind.
Yeah.
you know?
Yeah, yeah, I love
that. Nest, and I really want to, I want to be busier almost.
Yeah.
So
that's great. That's great.
I don't know. I don't know if it is or not.
Well, it's neutral. Let me say it that way. I think it's neutral. I think, if it's honestly coming out of what you want, why would you not pursue it?
And again, I'm maybe this is personality related too. I'm rarely content.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm always looking for the next thing, looking for something else.
Well, and Laura asked me this question this week. We were talking about this whole area of contentment, and she said, "So do you feel like you're content in every area?" I was sharing with her my conversation with Jacob. She goes, and I said, "No." I said, "I think in the work world right now, I feel a sense of contentment." But we went to this charity water, the experience lab thing that's in the factory. I don't know if you've seen it. It's right above your favorite store, Johnny O's. It's just above upstairs. This guy, Scott Harrison, has built this this nonprofit over the last, I'm not sure how many years, but incredible nonprofit, just bringing clean water to parts of the world don't have clean water. Just, I mean, amazing. So this lab we went through, it's probably a 45-minute, maybe an hour-long tour. Very experiential. We took some of the grandbabies over there, very hands-on. It was so moving to me. Watch the video. And, you know, I know that there's places that don't have clean water in the world, but I also completely forget about it. And they do such a beautiful job of telling that story and the need and what we can do to try to help it out. I was really moved a couple of times. I found myself going, okay, gosh, I feel like I'm on the brink of tears, you know? And a couple of times I was like, okay, man, what do I need to do? Do I need to get involved with it? Do I need to start traveling the world again? Do I need to go work for a nonprofit? Like, my brain was just going off. So in those moments, what I want to do, I want to slow down enough to go, okay, something touched me. And is it a blind spot? Maybe. Or is it just an area of passion that I've pushed to the back burner? Maybe. Or is it just a powerful moment and it just needs to, I need to feel it and let it go. So again, when I talk about contentment, I don't think I'm just like, okay, I don't need to do anything differently ever. But I think I'm also just like, I said this to Laura. I said, I think I want to be really, I don't want to be chasing to prove something, but I also want my yes to be on the table. I want to have my hands open. I want to, when something stirs in me, I want to go, hey, I need to do something about that. And I'm trying to figure that out in the second half of life.
So what do you think it was with that particular?
Gosh, I still don't know.
Really?
I think part of it, I mean, the only thing I've been thinking about is, I think part of it was I really miss getting my hands dirty in parts of the world that are so underserved. You know, in my pastor days, I got to do a lot of, I was blessed to go on a lot of trips around the world. You know, I tell people I've traveled a lot around the world, but not to the places anybody wants to go to on vacation, right? But man, I think of some of these places in Africa or in, Southeast Asia, and just where, you know, the poverty is, you can smell it, you can see it. And I think that was part of the video that he shows in the tour, you see these families living in I think it was in Ethiopia. No, I'm not sure. In some part of Africa. And you see these women, you know, carrying the water on their heads and their beautiful, beautiful faces, dark, dark black. And you just, the beautiful colors of clothing they wear. And I know those people. I've seen those people. I've been with those people. And I think there was some part of me as I watched the video going, man, I miss being there to try to offer something, to try to serve, to try to help. Mm. At the same time, I think there's this humbling moment of going, I waste more water brushing my teeth, you know, than some of these people get. And so I think there was this, no, I don't think I felt shame about that necessarily. I think I felt just this of going, man, it's so not fair that 700 million people still in the world don't have access to clean water.
Yeah.
And I just think, I don't know. Amazing. It stirred something in me, you know. Yeah. So I don't know. I just like, is there something I can do about it? You know, do I need to give? Do I need to serve? That was good.
It's funny too, as you've reeled off all these questions. Every one of them was, "Do I need to?"
Interesting. Yeah.
So there's something about your wiring that there's a.
I always go to need instead of want. Do I want to?
Yeah.
I think get to the want to, but I don't get there first. You're right. There is such a. That's the shame part. That's the God love them, the Pentecostals I was raised with. You know. Everything was a need. God's will is so fragile. You better do it right, or He's going to be upset. Instead of being able to go, what are the desires of my heart? You know, what do I want?
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say.
There's a blind spot for me. How much I still say need. Sorry.
No. Yeah. Go ahead.
No. Just what you said. I go, yeah, that's a good observation you made.
Yeah. I think if you, it was interesting that you said, oh, you know, do I need to? And then, but it stirred something in you. So I was just curious, do you want to do something with that group?
Yeah. Well, I think that's what that's a much better question. Like, that's a great clarifying question for me. You know, like there is something ever since we were there last Saturday, I think is when we went, I found myself not just thinking about them, but just thinking about, are there other things in this season of life that I need to be involved with that I would need to take a couple steps toward? God, I did it again. That I need to be involved with. Yeah. But it's that I want to, that I desire, you know, what do I really long for?
Well, I think
this feels like a counseling session for me. Thank you.
Oh, wow. Okay. my fee is really low.
Yeah. So, that's,
yeah. I think you know, in this world, there'll never be a shortage of opportunities and needs.
Right.
And I really believe God doesn't need us.
Right.
So I think he's wired us to do certain things, and they have fulfillment for us, glory for him. So I think finding the place where you enjoy giving back is critical.
Here's an old Frederick Buechner quote that says something like this. I won't do justice to it, that your vocation is the place where your deepest passion meets the world's greatest need. You know,
that's good.
But I love how he starts it. What's your deepest passion? You know, how have you been wired? You know, what's the thing that you go, man, I want to do something about that. I want, not need.
Yeah.
And then the need is external. Gosh, how can I take what I want, what I'm passionate about, and how can I serve another need? That's a cool quote to remember for me today, I think, even.
Yeah. And I think it's hard for me to identify things I'm passionate about. It's easier. When I think of that, I think in terms of what am I good at?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because generally that's what I enjoy. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I think off the top of my head, our new podcast name. That makes sense to me though. I think it would seem like that which we've got the most reps in, there would be passion about. That which we do well would be the thing we'd want to take care of others and serve others and give to others out of, you know?
Yeah. That old business question, you know, that people are always asking about their salespeople. Do I need to try to train up weaknesses or,
you know, capitalize on strengths?
Capitalize on strengths. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. So, but I think in the spiritual world, in that realm where you're wired, where you're gifted is where you need to be. If you're dreading something every week, that's probably another place for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
You're eyeballing something.
I am. I thought I'd just look at a couple more of these questions under the same category. I loved how this guy organized his blind spot questions. And let's see if there's anything to jump on here. What's been the cost of not dealing with your blind spots? You know, or maybe what's the cost of not dealing with them? Why do you think we protect certain patterns or stories even when they're hurting us? In other words, the way I'm hearing that question is, gosh, when I find out about a blind spot, why am I slow to want to correct it, address it?
Why does an addict stay addicted?
Yeah. There's a good answer to that, isn't
it? You know, I don't know.
What? Why do I keep doing? Well, that sounds very Paul-like, doesn't it? Why do I keep doing what's good for me even when I know there's something better for me?
God, that's great.
Yeah.
Why do I do the things I don't want to do?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny. When you just said that, I thought I had this overwhelming sense of relief. Like, that's not a new question.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's a human raised question. You know, and for some reason, that's always comforting a little bit. Like, you're not dealing with something alone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do I do the things I don't want to do?
Right. Right. Yeah. 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 There's definitely not a soundbite answer to that. There's definitely not a cookie cutter response to that. And I think it's a question that every man, woman should wrestle with on a regular basis. Why do I keep doing something that's not, you know, it's what we talked about, you know, a couple months ago. I mean, for me, it's just, why do I not exercise? Why do I not eat healthier? You know, and I think being 2.5-3 months into doing that, I'm like, I'm glad I'm doing that. But every now and then, why did it take me so many years to get serious about it? I don't know, but it did. And I think whatever the area it is, to be willing to go, where am I staying stuck in a perpetual pattern, habit, behavior, addiction that's not serving me well? I think it's a great reflection question.
Mm-hmm. And there's something about, you're right, there's no quick answer to that question. But there is something about, you know, you've said this before, if Genesis 3 is true and the fall occurred,
yeah.
which I think it logically, I believe it did,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
everything's broken.
Yep.
Everything. And so I think that leaves us with a huge sense of fear. And so we get into these predictable, addictive behaviors, and that's easier than addressing the fear of what might be on the other side, mm-hmm. even when it could be something good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it's
easier to stay in a pattern.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. I think the other, it kind of connects to what, you know, he says, why do we stay stuck even when they're hurting us? You know, I think for some of us, we may stay stuck because we truly don't know a better way to do it.
Yeah.
I see that in my office a lot. Good people, intelligent people, but who keep doing the same thing in the same way and expect a different result, as the old insanity definition says, you know. But it's not because they're quote unquote insane. It's because they're unaware. Go back to our question, our word from earlier. You know, the pattern has become so habitual. The neural pathway is so deep that our neuroscientist friends would tell us that it's like, I don't see a different way to do it.
Right.
Well, why would I not just yell when he upsets me or she upsets me, you know? And so part of it is being able to go, gosh, how do I learn a new behavior, a new pattern, a new way of relating? Again, the power of alcohol to numb away the pain is inarguable, you know? But is there another way I could deal with my pain? Well, if I've been doing this for years, I feel like this is the only thing that works.
Right.
But a lot of it is that's where the growth, the transformation, you know, people of faith would say the sanctification process happens. It's like being able to go, gosh, what needs to change in me?
Yeah. But
again, that this is coming full circle. We're talking about blind spots. Sometimes I need somebody to help me see that behavior that I'm continuing to hang on to.
Right. And is there something better?
Yeah.
You know, which is a distortion of Genesis 3 too.
Mm-hmm.
That, hey, even though God gave you all this, there's something better.
Right, right.
And
right.
there's something different.
Yeah.
And different than what
he
would say.
Yeah. It's, you know? It's easy to think about that incredible story and of, you know, Adam and Eve in a garden. And the rule is everything that's here is yours to enjoy for your pleasure, except one tree. You know, I remember being younger and hearing that story going, well, that's so stupid. I would have loved everything else. I would have never touched that tree. They were so dumb. Why'd they go to that one tree? All those other trees and all the fruit from the other trees, they could have had that. Why'd they get that one tree? And then I just, you know, as an old man now, I go, oh, as soon as I heard you can't go to that tree, that's probably the tree
exactly
I would run
to. Exactly, the tree would be gone.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, I know I'd be at that tree.
Prone to wonder, baby, prone to wonder.
Well, and if, you know, if it as Paul said, if Adam is the perfect representation of man, then he did what we all would have done.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah,
and so
and what we all do.
We exactly. all do. I was going to say we all
it's
do it now.
Not just past tense, right?
Yeah, we all want what we can't have.
Yeah,
we all are drawn to. Yeah. That's a great. We're prone to wonder.
Yeah, yeah. There's one last question, and we'll wrap up probably shortly after that. But and we may not spend much time on this. We don't talk a lot about work culture in here or leadership. But I thought this question is worth kicking around for a sec. How can leaders create cultures where feedback is welcomed, not feared, so that blind spots can be seen and addressed?
Ooh, there's a lot in that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So read it one more time.
How can leaders create cultures where feedback is welcomed, especially around blind spots? So often, his question would say this, so often the culture's feedback is almost feared. So if my boss or if my colleague comes to me, gives me feedback, I'm like, oh gosh, I'm afraid. What have I done wrong? I'm about to get fired. That's what I think. I'm making an assumption, I guess. And he's saying, man, what would it be like to work in a culture where feedback, blind spot exposure is normalized?
I'm not sure you can create that culturally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, because the assumption there is that everyone in that organization is healthy enough to both give and receive feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And you're probably not going to have that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's my old man cynical answer to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It might be. And it might be true, too. I don't know.
I think you can try.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the first word that comes to mind is some vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
know, much like parenting.
Mm-hmm.
I think your story with your kids one time was, hey, I don't know that I'm right about this.
Right.
You know, and so often in a meeting, if there's a leader, my guys I'm partners with are great about this. I mean, they lead their respective organizations and then run the one here, mm-hmm. but they'll ask for mm-hmm. my feedback when they don't have to have it.
Yeah.
And so, even sometimes I know they've decided what they want to do
yeah.
and you know,
yeah.
But still they're, so I think you can work to create that culture by, being approachable, being vulnerable, yeah. Exhibiting that. Mm-hmm. Openness.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it reminds me of that quote that I don't know who even to attribute it to, but health of the leader is the health of the organization.
That's it.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I guess, first of all, his question, how can leaders create cultures where feedback is welcomed? Well, man, they've got to be willing to take feedback, just like you talked about your guys, you know, which is what an honor, what a good place to be with guys like that. I think a lot of Patrick Lencioni's work, you know, he has this model of the five dysfunctions of a team and, you know, what are the five things that keep organizations from running in a healthier way? Mm. And it's these five little things he has in a triangle. And at the base of it, you know, he says the most important thing for a healthy organization, for an organization where feedback could be welcomed, maybe to use this question, is trust. That there has to be this trust that's anchored in vulnerability. In other words, I know this is a safe place. I know this is a place where I can show up and I can say hard things. And it's funny because just up above that on his little pyramid, he says, healthy cultures do conflict well. And what he says about leaders demand and expect conflict. Now, for a lot of us, we think of conflict as like, you know, we're getting in a fight.
Right.
That's not what he's saying. He says, you know, and when we get in the, when we're around the conference table together, a healthy leader demands different opinions to show up. Well, that's vulnerability. Well, what does that require? Go back to the first level of his triangle. It requires trust.
Right.
So, again, I think a lot of it is if there's going to be a culture where feedback is more welcomed, I think trust and a willingness to say, hey, we do conflict in a really healthy way here. But I think an organization that does that probably does a whole lot of constant training of their people, constant reinforcement of, hey, look, guys, we talk about the hard things here. We're not afraid to. And we talk about the issues. We're not attacking the person, you know, because that's when it's feared. I've worked in organizations where the feedback was very personal. And so it was an affront. It was an attack from a leader.
Mm-hmm.
But I've also worked with teams where they've been able to say, hey, let's have a conversation about what just happened here. And that can be, I think that can be healthy or helpful.
Don't you think the bigger the organization gets to, the harder that becomes?
I believe it is.
More variables.
I think that at that point you have to start getting into departmentals. By department, can we do that? But
right.
Yeah. It's different if you got an organization with, you know, 12 people in your shop. You can probably have some really deep conversations. But when you've got 200, 2,500 people, that's a hard culture to manage, I think.
Well, I think the reality is a lot of leaders don't want feedback.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you think about all my buddies I know that manage people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they spend, you know, a couple times a year doing reviews. But they're reviewed by their boss, not by their peers.
Right.
Or by their subordinates.
Right. Right.
Which would be an interesting, I'm sure some companies probably do
that. Oh, sure.
But,
they do.
You know, hey, let's review. You know, here's what I think about you as a boss.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you have to be willing to kind of take some feedback and I think it's to your point, I think the health of the leader is probably the most
mm-hmm.
important thing in creating
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I'm not willing to receive feedback, how can I expect my people?
And I think too, and this is a hard one, this is again, hard to go an episode without talking about some sort of sports lesson. I think this is the great sports lesson for kids.
Mm-hmm.
John Wooden, the great UCLA coach, had a great quote. He said, I treat all my players fairly, but I don't treat them all equally.
Yeah.
Here's the reality. And pick a sport that's going on right now or one of your favorites or a movie, singing. You know, there are people in the band that are more important than others to the success of that band.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when members that are not the key members think they are,
yeah,
that's a problem.
Yeah, yeah. Got to know my role.
Well, you hear it all the time. Now we're in the playoffs, I think, for hockey and basketball, and you hear role players, and role players played a great role. And man, if they, and I've heard this several times, man, if they were on another team, they'd be the star. And I'm thinking, no, they would not.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a reason they're able to play a role because the stars on that team carry the weight.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not equal and fair. And I think if an organization, a company can realize that, hey, you are important, but the reality is I can go hire your position tomorrow.
Then I can so-and-so.
Yeah. I don't want to. Mm-hmm. I'd rather have you here, but let's not act like you're the CEO. Mm-hmm.
It made me think of, remember that, I'm going old school here for a second, but remember during the Bulls dynasty, Steve Kerr, very much a role player, hit that incredible shot game, maybe six, Utah.
Yeah, at the game winner.
Yeah.
A little free throw line jumper.
Yeah. Okay. Obviously, no one in the building's thinking that's who's taking the shot. Of course, Michael Jordan. If not Michael, then definitely Scotty. I mean, it's going to be one of those guys, right? But do you remember after they won the championship, they come back, the big parade, big party in Chicago, and there's that big outdoor park, and all the guys are talking and telling little stories. And Kerr comes up and does his deal at the microphone, and he walks up and he says, hey, people have been asking me what happened in that last play of the game. Let me walk you through it. Phil called a timeout. We gathered around, and Michael looked at Phil and said, Phil, this is too much pressure on me. I can't take this shot. Maybe have Steve take it. And Kerr has this great story. Yeah. And he said, I thought, okay, well, once again, I got to bail Michael out. Yeah. And he ends it with, so that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Right.
That's just such a funny thing. But I love that because he's making fun of himself. And in effect, he's going, I know I'm not the man. I know I didn't carry us to this championship. I know who did. But by golly, I'll get my 15 seconds of fame right now.
Right, right. Well, and if you remember those teams, which you and I do, there was a revolving door of the Steve Kerrs.
John
Paxson hit a shot like that to win
one. Sure did, yep.
Craig Hodges. So there's guys that they,
Yeah.
And, successful movies that have had parts 2, 3, 4, 5, they've had different supporting actors, but usually the main,
well, Tom Cruise this weekend,
Mission Impossible 25 or whatever,
exactly,
and so
exactly.
And the same thing with, there's a saying, I forget who did the, I don't think it was Drucker, but somebody had done some research on, businesses living past the life of their founder rarely happens statistically.
Yeah.
And so there's a hierarchy, and some of that's just a healthy, as probably Chip Dodd would say, let's say a healthy shame. Hey, I'm good, but I'm not. It's not just me.
Yeah, right. So, well, thanks for the question about blind spots today. It's fun to kick the
sub-questions around.
Yeah, I
know.
Good stuff. Yeah, it was. Again, if you have questions, feel free to email us, rearviewmirror25@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And we are, as Steve said at the beginning, we're back with season two now after our one-week break.
Was it only 1 week?
Yeah.
Man, I spent the whole week trying to catch up on my DMs, too. So if I haven't gotten back with you, I'm working on it. I'm in the process. Give me time. Sometime before season two ends, I'll get back to you. But keep hitting them. Keep sending them, whatever you do. Keep doing it. Keep DMing.
Well, and until next time, we will take a break and be back in a while.